Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And to celebrate the fact that single tickets for CAMA are going on sale today, September 13th, through the Libero Theater and Granada Theater box office, we have with us Justin Rizzo Weaver. He is actually the, managing director?
Director of operations.
Director of operations for CAMA. And I want to talk a little bit about CAMA because the season is incredible. And likewise, the people that are coming to Santa Barbara are incredible and not to be missed. And the press release about this wisely says, experience the global reach. So this is the international series is the title of the series that will open. And it features the London Symphony Orchestra. And the great thing is that they're co-presenting. And what an experience, Justin. The Music Academy of the West will be playing with the London Symphony Orchestra.
Well, the concert that we're presenting is a full co-presentation of the Music Academy of the West and CAMA. And we partnered before with the London Symphony Orchestra concert. So this is our second time around as co-presenters of the London Symphony, which is widely regarded as perhaps the world's greatest orchestra. Of course, that's always subject to opinion, but it's regularly in aficionados' top five. And its distinctive large sound, amazing brass section, woodwind section is unique. It has a local flavor still, which is not as common in orchestras these days. And the program is incredible. That's definitely not to be missed.
And so can you just tell us like two features of the program?
Sure. Well, for one, I think focusing on the talent, they have a new music director, Sir Antonio Pappano, who was born in Britain, but I believe he first emigrated to the United States and then Canada and then back to England again. So he has kind of an accent of indeterminate origin. And he's known as an opera conductor. He was until he assumed this position with the LSO, he was the music director of the opera house at Covent Garden, the Royal Opera House. So that's a significant appointment. I believe this is his first time touring with the LSO and certainly his first time in Santa Barbara with them. So that's not to be missed. And as for the music itself, that program is going to conclude with Mahler's First Symphony, which is a titanic work of immense symphonic significance, and hearing it by an orchestra that's capable of projecting and functioning as one and not missing notes and truly knowing the music under great directorship, like Sir Antonio's, you would normally have to travel quite some distance to hear something like that. So we're bringing it to your front door.
And I have to say, Richard Dugan is our producer, and Richard's listening as well. And I got a Mahler story. So Maestro Dudamel was passing through Santa Barbara, and for some reason the station allowed me to interview him, and it was in the studio at the time. And Mahler was on the program, and it was before he was going to perform. And Richard said, "You know, Maestro, I've always wanted to know why you don't change the key." Remember, Richard?
I do remember. Now, be careful how you tell that story, because what you're about to tell them is certainly accurate. But then I found out from another maestro that it is possible. But I understood why. Yeah. I understood why Dudamel didn't.
Yeah, so it's possible. And I think the other maestro, I think, was but it was so interesting because maestro handled it beautifully. His comment really reverberated with me because, you know, of what I do for a living. But he said, you know, if I'm Picasso and I have done a painting and I use orange, I don't change it to yellow. And we automatically got it. Richard and I were like, okay, that light bulb went off. Yeah, that was, and Richard's favorite piece is the Mahler.
Mahler's, what was it, fifth, that the violinists refer to as not Mahler's fifth, but the Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker.
All the symphonies are fantastic. We could spend an entire episode just talking about Mahler, but I'll just tag on one little comment, which is that's a very ironic thing that Maestro Dudamel said, because Mahler himself was a conductor in his own right of great renown during his time, probably better known as a conductor than as a composer until after his death. Mahler was notorious for reorchestrating other composers' works to try to improve them or make them easier for the players to navigate.
Hey, Richard, you were right.
I believe he orchestrated four Schumann symphonies with marginal notes. And he even went so far as to change works by Richard Strauss while Strauss was still living. He would say, oh, Strauss was a young man when he wrote this. You should not play that on the flat clarinet, and play it on the plain clarinet.
I want to hear Mozart's Requiem in E flat major. I have no idea what that means. It just came to me.
So going on as far as the luminaries that are coming, the CAM is going to bring to us, you know, this is the 106th concert season. Can you believe it? 106.
Yes.
And the theme for this year is musical bridges connecting continents, cultures, and generations. So needed right now, with the world so divided. We go on to say the Los Angeles. Say again, Justin.
Let's drill down a little bit to find the multiple meanings of that phrase of how. I mean, sometimes you have to look a little bit beyond where an orchestra is from to see how it's connecting continents and cultures. Because, for example, the International Series is heavy on orchestras from Britain and the United States, but of course they're led by people from other places with soloists from other places in Europe and elsewhere. And also a particular note is that we are bringing Chinique Orchestra, whom we tried to bring before the pandemic, and their concert was canceled by the pandemic. So this is long overdue. Chinique Orchestra is, I think it's the world's first Black and ethnically diverse orchestra. Founded by a powerhouse of a person named Chichi Nwaneku, who lives in Britain. And the orchestra's work has been endorsed by the likes of Sir Simon Rattle and others. They're spectacular. And they also program repertoire by Black and ethnically diverse composers as well, all of which is, the sad thing is that this repertoire takes this level of effort to bring to the public, because it's all fantastic repertoire that stands aside the great masterworks easily on its own, right? So we are proud and privileged to be part of this movement to uplift these voices that have not been heard in the past and are thankfully being heard more now. And there's definitely been change, but there's more change to do. We want to be part of the solution.
I think that's beautiful, beautiful. So this is the Santa Barbara debut of Chinique, and you can take a look at them on, like, if you YouTube or any some of the sessions that they've recorded, and it's really moving. And so I'm super happy they're coming. Also, Los Angeles Philharmonic conductor laureate Esa-Pekka Salonen is coming. He's been to Santa Barbara before, right?
This is his 16th visit to Santa Barbara at the helm of one or another of his orchestras. Of course, the LA Phil has played in Santa Barbara over 300 times. We have a relationship with the LA Phil that extends back to the earliest days of both our organizations. This is LA Phil's 106th concert season and CAM's 106th concert season.
You're kidding. That's amazing.
And with maybe two or three exceptions, LA Phil's been part of every season since the beginning. And for some years in the middle period of our organization's existence, they were coming up maybe 4 to 6 times a year. And that's how you get up to 300 performances over the years. Solonen was their music director from 1992 to 2009. And so, you know, he knows us, he knows Santa Barbara. He's been up with the orchestra for the runouts that they do every year for CAMA. And then he's returned with the Philharmonia Orchestra, which was his most recent gig before he moved to San Francisco. Now he's leaving San Francisco. We don't know where he'll go next. This is wonderful homecoming in a way for him that we'll see him here again in Santa Barbara with the LA Phil.
And the Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra also is coming with Avi Avital and Esteli Gomez. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic and fascinating concert. The concert is titled Venetian Splendor, and it focuses on two things. Last year was the 300th anniversary of the composition of the Four Seasons by Vivaldi, which is probably the most famous piece of classical music, hands down. You have to take that in, that piece was composed, you know, 301 years ago. And it's, well, we're celebrating that it's still in circulation and still popular now. I mean, can you think of anything else that has that sort of longevity outside of perhaps a Grecian urn? So that's amazing in and of itself. So we'll celebrate that performance. And then, of course, Avi Avital is a mandolinist. And those are all violin concertos, the Four Seasons are. So he'll be performing the violin parts on mandolin, which is an easy transcription because the mandolin has the same tuning and layout as a violin does. It's just, played with your hands in a different way. So those will probably be Avital's own arrangements for mandolin of those works that are originally for violin and chamber orchestra by Vivaldi. And then Esteli Gomez, who's a two-time Grammy Award winner. What's that?
I said that is so interesting. I had no idea the mandolin was, it had the same tuning and structure as the violin. My grandfather, who emigrated as in his 20s from Germany, but he brought his mandolin with him, and he was an avid mandolin player. And I remember, wow, okay, that brings me back. And you're saying Esteli Gomez, tell me more.
Yeah, Esteli Gomez is a two-time Grammy Award winning soprano with the ensemble Roomful of Teeth, of which she's a member. This is our first time presenting her. She's joining Avi Avital for this concert, and she's going to sing various songs from the grand days of the gondoliers in this Venice-centered program. And so between hearing Avi Avital play the Four Seasons on mandolin and hearing her sing these songs individually would be wonderful, but we get both in one concert. These are the kind of concerts I think the public can overlook if they just say, Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra, I'm not sure if I want to be there. You want to be there. CAMA doesn't fire blanks. We try to present only the best of the best, whether you've heard of them or not. And I promise you that all you need to do is just show up and listen from end to end, and it'll change your life.
So let's see, that's going on with the piece in Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra with new music director Jaime Martin. And tell me about that program.
Yeah. Jaime Martin is from Spain, I believe, speaking of Spain, as you were telling me about earlier. The Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, I believe this is maybe their fourth or fifth concert for CAMA. They've appeared four times previously, so this is their fifth concert for CAMA. And they go way back. I believe the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra was founded by Sir Neville Mariner, who also founded the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. And originally it was an orchestra for people who were outstanding musicians in the film industry, you know, who played with studio orchestras, to do something else on the side that was more focused on, you know, mainstay classical repertoire. And over the years, it's evolved into being a top-notch ensemble in its own right. One of Los Angeles's great musical happenings for sure.
Richard's giving us a sign, Justin, we got to go to a quick break, but a quote from a press release about the International Master Series. And like I said, I'm so fortunate that Justin's on the program today, because today, September 13th, is the day that single concert tickets will go on sale. And if you're listening and you're interested in it and the programs here, check out the Libero Theater and the Granada Theater box offices. And then you can go in person, by phone, online. And, you know, the tagline on one of the press release, join CAMA for a season where music builds bridges, forged with the power of sound. This is music that unites continents, celebrates diverse cultures, and inspires generation. And we're going to continue to talk a little bit with Justin. I want to just know a little bit more about the beginning days of CAMA, because I've just found out that CAMA's going to turn 106 this season, along with Los Angeles Symphony Orchestra, which is amazing to think about that we started at the same time. That's amazing. So, Richard, let's go to a quick break, and then we're going to come back with Justin Rizzo-Weaver talking a little bit more about CAMA's beginnings. I'm really interested in that, and why CAMA stayed around so long. That's another thing I'd like to hear from Justin. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I have the pleasure of speaking with Justin Rizzo-Weaver with CAMA. And he is telling me that CAMA is 106 this season. And this season is entitled, I've got it right here, entitled International Series, Master Series, Musical Bridges Connecting Continents, Cultures, and Generations, the 106 Concert Season. How did it start, Justin, 106 years ago here in Santa Barbara?
Well, that is a complicated question, but I'll try to boil it down. That after World War I, there was widespread movements in the United States to revitalize the arts and communities. People viewed the arts, had the mindset that investing in the arts would be a way to rebuild morale as well as infrastructure in communities, community spirit. And Santa Barbara was part of that movement, and as it turned out, a significant part of that movement. An organization called the Civic Music Committee formed, and as well as an organization called the Community Arts Association. And those two organizations are pretty much CAMA, CAMA being the last surviving branch of their activities. But in the 1920s, the activities of the Community Arts Association in the 1920s extended to far more than just music. It included drama. That organization was responsible for rebuilding the Libero Theater. They were indirectly responsible for the existence of Old Spanish Days, which happened to celebrate the reopening of the Libero Theater. They had a plans and planting division, which did basically civic planning projects. And they had a school of the arts, if you can believe it or not. So the 1920s was a happening time, and this was funded toward the end of the 20s by money from the Carnegie Corporation, if you can believe it, resulting in almost an overabundance of funding, and the organization grew to a size that we can't even imagine by today's standards and what they were up to. And of course, it all kind of collapsed during the Depression. But CAMA is a surviving piece of that organization, and we survived the Depression, World War II, floods, fires, pandemic, and whatnot, through large part the interest and faith of funders, patrons who believe in the arts and want to see great orchestras and performers come to Santa Barbara year after year, and of course our audiences who are very steadfast, the fans of classical music. Like classical music, you don't have to twist their arms to get them to attend. That audience has changed over the years, but it still exists.
Yeah. It's fascinating because something happened in my life where the Libero has a a room underneath in that sort of basement that really people don't go into much. And there's a storage area there. And they were interested to know if I could help identify an old, it's a coffin grand, it's a square piano that had lost its legs and was wedged up in between the Klieg lights and some of the, and we couldn't dig it out, but I could squirm back there and take a look. And I did the research on that piano, found out that the Community Arts Association, when the Libero reopened in the 20s, after the rebuild, after the earthquake, they performed a play called Beggars on Horseback. And it was about a concert pianist. I kind of figured out that that piano, through a number of different channels, but especially a historian of square grands helped me from the East Coast. We kind of found out that that was probably the piano that was used on stage when that play opened the new season.
That's nothing short of amazing. You've brought to light a piece of our history that I didn't know. And I want to do that instrument. I have a soft spot for square grand pianos, by the way.
Yes. And yes.
Funny that came up in conversation.
So it's really hard to see just because it's wedged in between the wall and the stanchions that hold the old Klieg lights, and it's really wedged. It's got no legs. It has no. Basically, you could see the keyboard, and I could see the strings and the harp and the air vent. So when I could see that, then, you know, those pianos were very distinctive. Each piano maker in 1880, 1890, they had their own way of doing the keyboard structure. Not that the keys are any different, but the roundness of of the encasement is different. So I was aided in that. But the thing is that I want to just say that the Libero is a part of CAMA in a big way. And when Justin was telling us about the Community Arts Association and how it started, and the Libero was the center of it in the 1920s, I want to just say that the Libero is an intimate and an amazing place that where CAMA performs their master series. And, you know, this is a theater that actually has, well, first of all, it's California's first theater. But second of all, there's a feeling to it. There's an energy to it. There's a smell to it even that you find nowhere else. And I just want to say, Justin, I thank you very much for coming on and telling us about this series. But one of the things that I found out about this old coffin grand that had been sitting there probably since, I would say about 100 years, that was buried in that storeroom, because the storeroom goes back to Mr. Libero himself. So that was the first Libero. That storeroom is a vestige of the previous theater that was there. And we think, now that, you know, I got some musicians and people that play coffin grands regularly and perform on coffin grands, I interviewed a couple of those musicians, and one of them mentioned to me that everything that was heard on stage performed by CAMA, that old piano sang to it because of the resonant frequency of some of the strings. And I thought, oh, wow, I got to tell Justin this.
That's true. I wonder what shape it's in. I wonder if you can even get a sound out of it. But the strings are there, you know.
Yeah, we did get a sound out of it. I mean, I had my expert on the phone. We were trying really hard to see if we could get a sound, because basically the idea was, what does the Libero do with it? And if it is part of the historic Libero, you know, maybe now that we know it was probably used for that play and many other things that the performing art at the community arts did, do we restore it? And it is restorable. I mean, but next time you're in Santa Barbara, give me a call and I'll see if I can take you to meet the old boy. And it's real hard to see, but we'll find it.
Maybe we can tag it on to a day when I'm at the Libero, because we talked about the international series of the Granada, and we also have a second concert series at the Libero, which is the master series. And CAMA has been presenting at the Libero since, you know, the earliest days of the organization. So since the Lobero has been rebuilt and restored in 24. So pedigree of presenting chamber music and recitalists at the Lobero goes back a long way, and many great classical musicians have stepped on that stage and played a number of pianos, of which that might be one of them. It would be fascinating to see it.
I'll send you the research and the article that I did for the playbill on that piano. But Richard's saying we got to go to quick break. And Richard, I'm expecting some folks in the waiting room. Have they arrived? They are. Okay. So we need to say goodbye to Justin. And boy, we will see you at the performances. And like I said, I'm thrilled that Justin's on with us today, because today, single tickets for 2024-25 CAMA concerts go on sale today through the Lobero Theater and Granada Theater box office.
Folks can go to camasb.org and read all about all the concerts, and then there'll be links that are active from there to directly buy tickets that way. Or people can show up in person at the box offices or use the telephone.
Excellent. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming on. And what a cool, I celebrate the 106th season. That's amazing achievement.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's go to quick break. Richard, when we get back from the break, I want to introduce the producing unit and a play they're doing, which is a dear to my heart play because it has to do with Alzheimer's, and it's produced in association with the Alzheimer's Association, California Central Coast chapter. It's a play called The Father. And of course, the father is suffering from Alzheimer's in this play. And it's an incredible work directed by Bill Egan, who's going to join us. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart and my friend Bill Egan, who is with us right now. I want to introduce, but before I do, I want to talk a little bit about the play. This is a play called The Father by Florian Zeller. You might have seen the Academy Award winning film adaptation based on this play, also directed by Zeller. We're celebrating seven performances only at Center Stage Theater here in Santa Barbara. Why I wanted to cover this is because my father suffered from what they call Lewy body dementia. This play is going to be something that I'll probably cry about, but I want to go see. The Father is a gripping and emotionally intense play, delving into the complexities of dementia from the perspective of an elderly man named Andre. As the world becomes increasingly disoriented and fragmented, the audience is taken on a powerful journey through the mind of someone struggling with this devastating condition, masterfully portraying the confusion and heartbreak experienced by Andre and his daughter, and offering a poignant look at the impact of aging and memory loss. The play takes on these issues with profound honesty and charming humor peppered throughout. What's so interesting to me, Bill, is that the people in my life that I've known that have Alzheimer's, dementia, any of the memory issue maladies, it seems that the most intelligent people I know, and that life seems to take the brain. When people are not that bright, you know, they get another disease. But my really brilliant family members and friends, they who suffer from this have in their, you know, working adult life been fantastic thinkers. It seems a terrific irony. Anyway, I want to introduce the two gentlemen that are here today. First of all, Bill Egan's been on the show numerous times because he's always bringing something super interesting, and he's extremely professional. He's the director and producer of this show. And he has worked as actor, director, producer throughout the United States in some of the theaters he's worked for: Boar's Head, Wharton Center for the Performing Arts, Spotlight, Riverwalk, Garvin, The Libero, Rubicon, Circle Bar B, and Center Stage Theater. He directed Odd Couple, Steel Magnolias, Most Massive Woman Wins, The Foreigner, It Had to Be You, Wally's Cafe, Private Wars, Post-It, Notes on a Marriage, and Quilters. He's the co-founder of the producing unit and has appeared as an actor in God of Carnage, Time Stand Still, What Rhymes with America, and appearing twice as James Henry in, this is the show that I covered and I loved it, which was 154th in Paradise. Most recently at Center Stage last year. That was fantastic, Bill. And thank you for the tickets to that. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Good. I have with us a great actor. And I want to tell you a little bit about Tom. And Tom's taking on this incredible role as Andre in this play. This is Tom's fourth appearance with the producing unit. He's appeared in American Dreams, Spoon River, and of course, 154th in Paradise, in which he was excellent. He was a member of the Genesis West Ensemble. He received the Independent Theater Award for Endgame and Title and Deed. He appeared in A Number, The Curse of the Starving Class, The Lieutenant of Innismore, The Pillow Man, The Designated Mourner, La Terrasse, The God of Hell, The Goat, or Who is Sylvia, and Blue Heart. He's a veteran of Santa Barbara Community College Theater Group. He's appeared in Becky's New Car, Beard of Avon, Fontainebras, George and Emily Get Married, The Heiress, Other Desert Series, and many other credits to his name. And I noticed that one of my favorite performers from Santa Barbara, Matt Tavanini, is also in the play. I love Matt's work. Matt is a captivating presence on stage, has been forever. Love that. And you've got an amazing cast lined up. And I want to, Bill, why don't you tell me a little bit about Tom's performance, and how do you direct Tom? I mean, this is a challenging role. How do you direct him?
Well, we talked about whose perspective this needs to be from, because of the subject matter and because of the writing, it can be up to interpretation what really is reality. And that's part of the puzzle of this piece. So Tom and I talked months ago. We sat down when I offered him the role, and one of the things that he has very meticulously and thoughtfully carved out was his own perspective on the role and his own perspective of what Andre is thinking, and that's kind of where we started from. I direct from a place of I'll bring ideas, Tom, but it's very collaborative, and Tom brings a lot to the table. So it was relatively very easy to direct him. So that's kind of where we started.
I want to just reflect on something that in reading about the play, and I've read a couple of reviews as well. This play really, to me, and I want to hear both of what you think about this, this idea of reality. And, you know, Bill was saying as he directs Tom, in the role of the older gentleman that is suffering from Alzheimer's, the nature of reality comes into question. And I got to say, I know what you're talking about, Bill, because you know, when my father was first diagnosed, he was having waking dreams that were pretty prescient. And actually, you know, if we say, well, what is reality actually? Is it something that you're manufacturing, or is it something that's pretty obvious and right in front of you? Well, these waking dreams seem to be the real him. And it was very odd because I could hear the themes that I've known, you know, that he went through all of his life come out in these waking dreams. And people would say, you know, oh, we're so embarrassed, don't talk about it. But the thing is that what he was dreaming, you know, when he was awake was kind of dealing with some major themes in his own life that were totally his reality. So I can understand how it would be a real challenge to direct Tom in kind of guiding the fabric of his own reality. And I have to say, I find it interesting that the daughter is trying hard to help, and Tom's character refuses a lot of assistance from her. I get that too, Tom. I understand that. I've been there. I wonder, Tom, how, I mean, you're such an accomplished actor. How do you prepare for such a role?
Really studying the text. I mean, this is such a well-written play that Zeller really gives the actor a lot of meat to put on the bones of the character. And, you know, Andre has, he's sort of alternating. A lot of times Andre is very confident in his view of reality. It's like you, the waking dreams. I hadn't heard that before, and it's a wonderful image for me. Is that is what's really going on in Andre's head. And at the same time, then at other times, Andre's not confident. He's frustrated. He's confused, both with Andre's own lack of memory, but also with the differing perceptions that other people, particularly his daughter, has. So it's a challenge because there are alternating moments where Andre's perception is different. And the audience really gets in this play to see so much of the play from Andre's perspective. I think that's what's so interesting about it, is that, you know, what you're seeing is really what's in Andre's head, often, not always in the play, but often it's what's in Andre's head. And that kind of gives the audience the same experience of confusion of what is reality.
One of the things that, you know, when I say waking dreams, there's this theory, you know, that in dreams, we can see a deeper reality in some ways. And I experienced just an interesting thing that Tom shared with you about my dad. So towards the end, he was watching a lot of cartoons, and he had four children. I'm the first born. And he was watching a cartoon that had four characters, you know, like animal characters that spoke or something, but there were four characters. And he was laughing and pointing to the characters and naming each one after each of his children. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, let me see if I can see why he's identifying such and such a character with me and such a character with David and Paul and Nancy. And lo and behold, those cartoon characters had certain personality traits that were like each of the four of us. So it was a stretch, but it was like, I get it, Dad. I get it why that one's, you know, me, and that one's my brother. I get why he was naming those characters after us. And also, you know, this idea of understanding your own reality as a way of maybe controlling your reality too. So there was an outward expression of what he thought about his kids in that cartoon. But I want to go back to this. Now, you say you follow the text of the play very carefully, and that's how you prepare. But do you know anybody that suffered from Alzheimer's? Did you study the physicality of such a person?
Yeah, I have known one person in particular who actually had vascular dementia, which is, each form of dementia is kind of its own reality. And in fact, each person's experience within each kind of dementia is unique. But yes, I did look at both the physicality and just the facial expressions and the concern and the frustration.
And I have to say, I'm thrilled to find out the association that has grown with this play between the California Central Coast Alzheimer's Association and the producing unit, which is wonderful, because Sunday, if you go see the play on Sunday the 15th, Sunday the 15th of September, there's going to be a panel discussion after the show. So those of us who have been touched by this disease can actually talk to the performers as well as the Alzheimer's Association representatives that will be at the show. And I gotta say, Bill, the Central Coast Alzheimer's Association was so helpful when I was going through my thing with my dad, because they had resources for many, many things that we were lost. And I'm so glad you're offering this panel discussion, because I don't think people know where to turn. You know, go ahead, Bill. You're about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually spoke with the woman who's going to be conducting the panel. Her name is Jordana Lawrence. And we talked about the fact that locally here in Santa Barbara, Alzheimer's is the third leading cause of death among the elderly. So very important to let people know that the support is there, and a huge outreach from them. And you're right, there's a lot of confusion, not only in the patient, so to speak, who is afflicted by the disease, but a lot of confusion with the caregivers on how they, what are they supposed to do? How do they do it? They don't understand what is happening. And the Alzheimer's Association can definitely help that. And this play very much deals with not only what Andre is going through, but also what the daughter is going through. And how does she care for dad as he's going through this? What's the best thing for him? Where does he live? And then dealing with sides of his personality that come out that frankly are multifaceted and not something that she normally has had to deal with. And, you know, there's a significant other affiliated with that. And also the play also delves into the other caregivers who are helping with him. So a lot of people affected by this disease. Alzheimer's Association obviously is their support, and we're really happy to be partnered with them. And hopefully it'll bring more people out, not only from the education standpoint, but also for people to see the show and to be able to not only recognize and relate to it, but also a sense of relief that, you know, we're seeing what we went through. And there is a sense of comfort in that, I think.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And the idea was, when we first started to work with them, that we were embarrassed to talk to them. And then they were actually so kind and generous, and we were like, okay, you know, we got your back. So this is such a thrill that you're bringing that panel discussion. Richard's doing that sign. We got to go to quick break. And I, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit. Here's the question, Tom. Has it affected your idea of reality, you know, to be the lead in this play? Do you see things differently? I wanted to ask Tom that when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. And before the break, I asked Tom, who is the special character. Tom Hanshaw is this character, who deals so much with the nature of reality, if his reality has slightly changed. Tom, what do you say?
It's had an effect. You know, there's a moment in the play where Andre talks about what he did for a living, and there's a difference between what Andre says and his daughter says. And, you know, sometimes I think about that. I think of some of the paths that I might have taken and how those kind of live in my brain as possible paths in my life. And could those reemerge as the reality that I live? You know, could I have, I was a lawyer for most of my life, in my working life. And, you know, could I have been an actor? Could I have been a race car driver? I mean, who knows? I mean, things that I've often, you know, thought about or toyed with doing on the side, you know, could those become reality when the chemistry of your brain changes?
Oh, interesting. And Bill, tell us how we get the get tickets, and there's only five shows, so got to jump on this. Oh no, seven performances. So Bill, go ahead.
There's actually seven, yeah. Yep. So September 13th through the 21st. So the 13th, 14th, 19th, 20th, and 21st at 7:30. And then matinees on Saturday and Sunday this weekend at 2 o'clock. Tickets can be achieved through centerstagetheater.org. Call the box office at 805-963-0408.
And you know where the Central
you can also
Stage
go Theater. Go to our website at the producing unit. Yeah, Center Stage Theater is at the top floor of the Paseo Nuevo Mall. It's the only black box theater, been around for a long, long time. If you want to know a little more about the play and about our company, you can also go to theproducingunit.org and get a good understanding of the show. And that will link directly to Center Stage. You can get tickets online. That's probably the best place to do that. You can also get them at the box office 1 hour before each showtime.
And, you know, I just remembered, so Matt Tavanini, I saw him as Caesar in Julius Caesar with Lit Moon. And I think I also saw him, I think I saw King Lear. I saw him do two performances with Lit Moon. I can't wait to see the play. Thank you. The play is at Center Stage Theater, done by the producing unit, directed by Bill Egan, starring Tom Hinshaw. And it is The Father by Florian Zeller, not to be missed. Thank you both.
Okay.